Good evening, and welcome to tonight's meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California. I'm Ann W. Smith, co-chair of the club's Arts Forum, and your chair for today. We also welcome our listeners on the radio, and we invite our audience to visit us online at commonwealthclub.org. And now it's my pleasure to welcome this evening's speaker, JoJo Capecchi. Her topic is Bernini's Rome, which typically reflects her love affair with the art of the Eternal City. And I'd also like to extend a special welcome to her husband, Ed Osgood, who is U.S. Ambassador to Côte d'Ivoire. Welcome. To provide a bit of context, Gian Lorenzo Bernini was an Italian artist who was perhaps the greatest sculptor of the 17th century and an outstanding architect as well. He created the Baroque style of sculpture and developed it to such an extent that he is considered the most outstanding representative of that style. His immense talents as an architect and painter and sculptor helped to define the visual style of the Baroque age. A native New Yorker, JoJo was educated at the Parsons School of Design, New York University, and Heatherley's College of Fine Arts in London for a master's degree. She was a member of President Reagan's task force for the Initiative on Women's Business Ownership, American advisor to Prime Minister Thatcher's Committee for Women into Business, and achieved the distinction of Honorable Seref Yüreğli at the Turkish American University, Istanbul. Although she resides in San Francisco now, the magnetism of her Italian roots brought her to live in Italy for a dozen years. And we'll hear a little bit about that. Welcome, JoJo.
Thank you. Buonasera. Lovers, art patrons, historians, friends, and wonderful Roman countrymen, how exciting to be invited to speak at the Commonwealth Club. Thank you so much for this grand opportunity, and it's beautiful to see a full house of people. You are really splendid to be here, and I'm going to start with a very Italian thing to do. I kiss you. Baci. May I bring you all roads lead to Rome, a first-class ticket to the Eternal City. Fantasize we're in Rome, enjoying la bella vita, la dolce vita. Mandolins play, people gesticulate, and motorinis, who don't care about anybody, zoom by. Let us stroll the vicolos. Bebe Deverton takes the protagonist of my novel. Imagine being in exciting Centro Storico, the historic center, in the footsteps of Bernini, Dante, Caesar, Nero, Berlusconi, with secrets no tourists know. Discover Rome, the city all roads lead to, the city of art, history, intrigue, adventure, and love. Having lived, studied, loved, and cried in this extraordinary city, I began writing my novel, All Roads Lead to Rome, in 1993. The Eternal City inspired me, especially as I came to learn about the kaleidoscope of the Italian network of power. This brought me to write a book sizzling with facts about this dazzling country known for its art, its culture, and also its mystery. The book reads like a memoir, but it is a novel. All Roads Lead to Rome is an unforgettable story about Italian passion and philosophy and art. To acquaint you with things, let me first give you a little example, reading to you the unwritten laws of Italy. For bella figura, live and look elegant at all times. Don't trust anyone. Everyone lies. Make deals. Never go direct. Keep a mystique. Don't let anybody know who you are, what you know, or when you're going to do it. Here's a little bit more advice. The national sports of Italy are adultery, tax evasion, people watching, flirting, conversation, graft, waiting, and football. Not all in that order. Becoming immersed in my book, you will come to know the glory of Italy, the extraordinary history of this land, where my roots began, just like Baby Deverton. She, an American expatriate, discovers Rome. And what does she learn about Rome? There's a mystical idea. Twins, Romulus and Remus, begotten from a she-wolf, founded Rome and brought Romanticism here in 753 BC. Others say the homosexual brothers were the offspring of a lusty prostitute whose dalliance with a noble god began the myth. Whatever, paganism has always flourished and embraced life from that day to this, bringing to mind Romans believe romanticism and life are best kept secret. Dishonest? Yes, dishonest. The recipe would spell disaster any place else, but here it works. For assorted favors, individuals can be bought and all degrees of dispensations granted by the Vatican, the 110-acre city-state within Rome. And it makes one's head spin with hypocrisy. Seductive Rome that has never changed savors the values of today with bravado. And they walk by every day of the week, every single day of the year, and they greet each other. Dottore, avvocato, mamma, ciao bella, caro mio, come stai, avvocato, generale. For centuries, Romans have realized the diabolical certainty that we are placed upon this earth, living between the avalanches of depression and the quicksand of boredom. Happiness, real happiness, falls somewhere in the middle. The schedule of Rome always begins with the tempo of Rome. So now you're in Rome, and I want you all to relax. It's a different tempo in Rome. Throw away your watch. Forget your calendar. Discard any appointments that you might have had. Live spontaneously. With the dual philosophy, carpe diem and dolce far niente. Seize the day and do nothing. Then drink a little wine, eat your pasta, sit in the sun, look at the art, and forget everything while you still can, kissing your sweethearts. Have a good time. The beauty of Rome is illuminated by the Baroque period. To know Baroque is to know Rome, and to know Rome is to know and love John Lorenzo Bernini, an artistic virtuoso, an architect, a playwright who captured realism and emotion. He also was a great painter. He dominated the Roman art world half a century. The world delights in his masterpieces, his sculpture, his fountains, his magnificent architectural designs at the Vatican, the Baldacchino. With Christ's words to St. Peter's, on this rock I will build my church. Fantasize, we're now in Rome, and whether you've been there or you've never been there, this is the eternal city. Imagine Piazza Navona, a theater before your eyes, alive with intrigue as it was in Bernini's time 400 years ago, with the Pope, spies, the populace, Rome, the unrivaled crossroads of the world. Rome is 2,765 years old this month. Buon compleanno, Rome. And here it is where the agony and the ecstasy take on a new meaning. Bravo, Bernini, says Bebe, sipping her cappuccino in Piazza Navona, studying his extraordinary fountain of the four rivers. You are a master of human understanding. You've given her eyes a feast, our imagination a fantasy. She walks around the fountain, seeing the intricacy of the water design, and is amused by the African model who represents that continent with his hand outstretched, telling to the world Bernini's sculpture will outlive Borromini's architectural disaster in front of me. Oh, those two men were rivals. Years later, Bernini would have no tears when Borromini committed suicide. Bebe, an aspiring sculptress, stops. to look at the marvels of this. And then she makes a very short little stride over to the fabulous palazzo. Whose palazzo was this in Piazza Navona? My golly, it was Doria Pamphili. Doria Pamphili knew how to be an ambitious woman. She started as the washerwoman to the future Pope Pamphili and later became his sister-in-law. And he kindly gave her the most extraordinary palace in that beautiful setting of Piazza Navona. It was Doria who decided she liked people watching. And to that, we really owe her a great deal of respect. This particular piazza spotlights action, people from all parts of the globe in continuous movement. Baby considers this and takes a short stroll, just a little further away, to the Campidoglio, the marvelous piazza Michelangelo created. And there she's going to visit Museo Capitolini, because she knows a piece of unforgettable sculpture is there, Bernini's Medusa. Medusa, a Greek myth Ovid tells us about in his Metamorphoses. This is like the story of Adam and Eve, with the lead character played by a snake. In Medusa's case, several snakes. In the study of Western civilization, the snake symbolizes the phallus. Freud saw this as a statue of a woman castrated, the result of violence imposed upon her by the original hero. Baby marvels at the mythical work made from one piece of Carrara marble, recently on exhibit here in San Francisco at the Legion of Honor, only the third time that statue's been outside the city of Rome. Knowing that one tiny tap incorrectly rendered from the chisel would have rendered the piece to rubble. How extraordinary to make this piece 400 years ago. Bernini, how the world appreciates you. How we love you. A toast to Bernini. Wherever one ventures in glorious Rome, Bernini's genius is present. Stroll through the city, what the Italians refer to as a passeggiata, and it is this way that Bernini was discovered. Think about Piazza di Spagna, and if you've never been there, it's at the summit of one of the seven hills of Rome. Piazza di Spagna is a meeting place for anyone wishing to drape themselves like Bernini sculpture all over it. 280 travertine marble steps, which reaches the summit of Pincio Hill, Villa Medici, Trinity de Monti, and the Borghese Gardens. In the early 1600s, Cardinal Scorpioni Borghese, who was Caravaggio's best patron, sauntering along, taking his daily passeggiata from his precipice at his residence, Villa Medici, spotted Bernini's dexterity and talent as he helped his father with a boat design that they were doing at the foot of what would later be the Spanish Steps. Cardinal Borghese immediately was astonished at the young boy's dexterity and talent. Bernini's father, who had brought his son to Rome from Naples to study his trade, which is typical of the Italian way of life, he was so delighted and said, "I'd like your boy to work some projects for me. Today, the immense talent of this brilliant genius is seen all over Rome. Gallery Borghese, Piazza Navona, the Pantheon, and throughout the Vatican, including the remarkable colonnade he designed at St. Peter's Square in perfect harmony with the greatest European architectural commission of the 16th century, St. Peter's Basilica by Bramante. That colonnade, which you will see in this video, is like a mother embracing her children." The story of how Bernini was discovered is an example of what happens on a passeggiata. Everything can happen while stopping and talking, because Italians never walk without stopping and expressing themselves vehemently. Voices are high-pitched all night long, well into 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning. a fact that's very amusing unless it happens to be under your bedroom window. Back to art. Pope Paul V, Borghese's uncle, was followed by Pope Urban VIII, who was anxious to find a second Michelangelo to glorify his papacy and to further beautify the Eternal City. This was no easy task. Keep in mind, earlier, in 1534, Michelangelo finally turned his back on Florence and settled in Rome for the last three decades of his life. One of the reasons, after he had completed his famous David in 1504, a symbol of Florentine freedom, was commissions were scarce. Nonetheless, under the patronage of the Medicis, in the last occasion of the benefactor's orders, he was sculpting St. John the Baptist. And Lorenzo de' Medici said to Michelangelo, "Fix this statue a little bit. Look as it's been hidden, ruined a little bit, buried. Send it to Rome, and we'll pass it off as an ancient work, and we'll sell better." Yet in this case, the Italian way of deal-making backfired. Lorenzo de' Medici and Michelangelo were cheated out of the true value of the piece by a middleman, a cardinal, of course, in the Vatican, who believed the statue a fraud. But Cardinal Riorio was so impressed by the work, he wanted Michelangelo in Rome. The timing proved advantageous, as the powerful leader, the narrow anti-Renaissance friar Savonarola, had been on a rampage with the bonfires of the vanities, the burning of extraordinary works of art, believing them profane. So his terrible rampage still haunted Florence. Michelangelo was glad to leave and go to Rome. 100 years later, the Counter-Reformation Church in Rome was revitalized by Pope Urban VIII and his wealth. He found Michelangelo's successor in the well-introduced Bernini, calling him Soprasante, overseer of the Vatican. Bernini was knighted at the age of 23. The Pope and Bernini dined frequently, and their close friendship continued 20 years while Pope Urban VIII remained on the papal throne. This formidable patron with immense power made Bernini rich. Bernini loved being rich. By 26 years old, he was receiving 2,000 scudis for a statue. Keep in mind, 2,000 scudi could maintain a family of several children 5 years. 25,000 scudi was today's equivalent of $1 million. So even though the Pope was riddled with debt from his reign, a reign highlighted by his disagreement with Galileo that the earth and the planets revolve around a stationary sun, that egocentric Pope adored Bernini, knowing everything he did would have his reign as Pope be exalted forever. With all of this, however, Bernini was uomo senza lettera, without formal education. And when he died, not one book was found in his house. Because of his lack of education, Bernini believed himself not good enough, and he worked compulsively, never understanding his greatness. He was the ultimate networker, politically astute and savvy, not unlike the people Bebe discovers in All Roads Lead to Rome. For example, the well-connected, very powerful avvocato and judge Cesare Denaro. Ambitious people, yes. People such as this and Berlusconi will bring surprise when you read my book. Like Michelangelo, Bernini had the Italian trait of la bella figura, presenting a perfect impression. They both accepted enormous tasks, vainglorious beyond any artist in history, was the Sistine Chapel. That commission alone. But the difference between these two geniuses is Michelangelo's commissions were, in many cases, beyond his ability to complete. Bernini was more businesslike and thorough. He finished his commissions. Bernini, a fiery blood, a masculine man with Naples in his soul, fibbed that he came from Florence to mirror Michelangelo because it was the birthplace of the Renaissance. Unlike Michelangelo, whose taste was chaste when he wasn't giving his heart and body and soul to one man, Bernini thrived on women, one in particular. His dramatic, black, intense eyes observed everything. His bon vivant life easily adopted the mantle of the charming courtier in his pursuit of important commissions. Bernini was a very remarkable worker, and it was reported that he took advantage of his workers. He even took advantage of himself. At the age of 81, as Michelangelo had done years before him, and how Bebe experiences her wonderful chance to be a sculptress, Bernini spent sometimes months searching the quarries of Carrara for a block of stone that met his approval. Then it had to be shipped to Rome unscathed before the first cut, whether Apollo and Daphne, the Rape of Proserpina, or the Ecstasy of Santa Teresa. Just before his death, Bernini chiseled away frenetically, 7 hours a day without stopping, hunched over a slab of stone, forgetting backaches and joint cramps. His gout-ridden hands were encrusted with marble dust that dried his pores and caused brittle skin to crust and fingernails to tear. Diligent, Bernini believed with exaggerated fervor, Almighty God had given him an extraordinary gift. And before he died, it was his obligation to return it, and rightfully, to the Catholic Church. Pius Bernini went to Mass and Communion faithfully 3 times at minimum a week. But throughout his artistic life, John Lorenzo Bernini knew the value of going to church. Not for dispensations, but to see and be seen by the movers and the shakers of the day, the cardinals, the pope, the aristocrats with gold scudos in their vaults. And at the same time, he did exploit his workers, not giving them credit. And furthermore, by 35, he helped himself to one of his workers' wives. Oh, I'm so sorry. Typical Italian. With all the angels he created, Bernini was no angel. His voluptuous, passionate affair with Costanza Bonarelli was well known in Rome for several years. His underling, a laborer in his studio, had to accept the compliment and the shame that his wife, Costanza, shared herself freely with the master. When summoned, Costanza went to give her affection willingly to Bernini. Bernini was inspired with potent lust, passion, and adoration, and produced a unique bust of Costanza that you'll see in the video, sculpted with the tenderness of a lover, completed in 1637. What is surprising is its informality. Bernini showed the world exceptional love, sensitivity, presenting Costanza, breathless and innocent, in perpetuity. She's young, she's vulnerable, she's the way Bernini wants to see her, the way Bebe discovers old men want women to be. And Bebe remembers the advice of her grand Zia Isabella. Baby, my rare treasure, learn to say no to a man and say yes at the same time. You make them wild. You will make them fantasize. Everything must be done slowly, the Italian way, with sighs, with glitter. You create romance and create mystery. Let them die for you. So Italian, so feminine. Eat like a little hummingbird. Men, dangerous devils. They want to stuff you with food, make you drink champagne until you're dizzy. They want to touch you everywhere. Take tiny itty-bitty sips when he talks to you and drink that champagne, but listen with wide eyes. And if he says anything, anything at all, just dazzle him like a glowworm and just say to him, shimmering with the light of a glowworm, I don't know. Search his eyes, inflate his ego. Remember, he's a spider spinning his web. A spider spinning his web. One can only create what's inside, and it must have weighed very heavily on the great Bernini's conscience how his love story with Costanza ended. After being intimate several years adoring her, during the course of their fabulous affair, Bernini spied his amorata in an intimate embrace with his younger brother, Luigi. Imagine the scuffle. Bernini tried to kill his younger sibling, first with a sword, and when that didn't work, an iron crowbar. To discover Costanza, the jewel, the person he adored for her innocence and sweetness, two-timing him made rage consume Bernini. To be Canuti was something that was absolutely not happening to him. Rage, rage, rage. Bernini could not believe it. About this time, Hell Hath No Fury as a Woman Scorned came to be. But what of a man who learns that his mistress is unfaithful? Oh, perdonami. It's vibrating. I know I should have turned it off. Perdonami pronto? Oh, the Vaticano. Per favore, Monsignor, the Pope. No, no, I can't speak to the Pope now. I'm in the middle of my lecture here at the Commonwealth Club in San Francisco. Oh, well, yes, I'm sorry to say, yes, we're speaking about Bernini and his vendetta. Oh, yes, in America, it has been reported the Cardinal at the Vatican made secret deals, yeah, with the cement king in Naples. I'm so sorry. I'm sorry, Your Grace. I really can't talk to you right now. Money to Switzerland? What did you say about the Swiss guards? No, 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 no. Please tell the Pope he's in my book, but he's going to have to buy it. Yes, just like everybody else. And I did not write about the nun and the priest, nor did I say anything about what happened with the Swiss guard in Lugano with the money. Excuse me, please tell Your Eminence. I'm very happy, but I'm really enjoying my talk here at the Commonwealth Club. Ciao. Corruption is everywhere. Let me return to art, Bernini and women. Bernini's vengeance was as imaginative as his artistic mind, but it was sinister. He ordered his faithful servant in the dead of night to go to Costanza's house, a shanty that she shared with her husband, and violently slash her beautiful young face with gorgeous pretty cheeks with a razor, disfiguring her forever. Vendetta, vendetta, vendetta. Bernini was inflamed with a vendetta. Passion and rage. This is what Bernini's masterpiece is like, and this is what Baby experiences in Italy with the international villain and famous Cesare Denaro. Both Bernini and Denaro were never punished for criminal acts. What about Costanza? Bernini's once gorgeous Costanza, forever mutilated, ugly beyond recognition, endured further suffering, disgraced, when Bernini arranged, like a savage, evil person, for her to be locked in a women's dungeon of a prison to suffer in a pit of hell with the dregs of society for adultery with his brother. Living with rats, letting her starve on scraps of bread. And at the same time, he made sure Luigi was exiled forever from the Eternal City. He loved control. What power he had. What presence. When Bernini, a millionaire with celebrity status, walked down the streets of Centro Storico with his head held high, macho, pride, smiles, the same streets Nero, Mark Antony, Bebe, and Berlusconi traverse, all said, look, look, it's Bernini. Famous Bernini. Yet, Bernini's benefactor, Pope Urbano VIII, was angry. He ordered his artistic genius behave, summoning him to the Vatican. "You must marry now the woman I choose." To marriage to Bernini. Italians all understand the Vatican's control. His chosen bride, Caterina Tesio, a virgin, was one of the most beautiful women in Rome. And within the same year when Bernini completed the marble bust of his mistress, at the age of 40, the same year he destroyed her with razors, wedding bells rang with Caterina already pregnant. Bernini, still infatuated by his mistress, could not forget her. He didn't think of his wife. When he did the tomb of the Pope, he had the chutzpah to use the model for charity as Costanza, maximizing her breasts, depicting her face as it was before his savage attack. The enraged Pope ordered him again, conceal her breasts. And then Bernini began the uncommissioned work with revenge, The Head of Medusa, showing the world what all women deserve when they are unfaithful, using his sharpest weapon, the virtue of his chisel. The bride, Caterina, bore 11 of Bernini's children, and before she died, cut Bernini and the male children out of her will, hating her husband, who kept his mistress's portrait that he had painted above their bed every single day of their married life. Revenge, revenge. Baby Debertin comes to know love and revenge in the Eternal City 360 years later, as does Silvio Berlusconi. And for that, one must read about the angels and the villains in my book, All Roads Lead to Rome, and understand that during the time I had the joy to digest the extraordinary art in Italy, I also learned about the bribery scandal, Tangentopoli, which came to light. Imagine savoring the beauty of Italy's art, having a little cup of cafe. A country that has 60% of all the art treasures in the world, just taking the Italian tempo of life and then hearing men with Brioni suits who were multimillionaires driving their Lamborghinis were putting a gun to their head, committing suicide. Women sporting Bulgari jewelry dressed with Valentino couture were hurling themselves off balconies on the Amalfi Drive. Villas and art were being traded as blackmail, payment under the table with the black market economy, and all because of one man, a judge, who exposed the links of a corrupt Masonic order called Propaganda Due with the CIA, Mafia, venal judge of the Supreme Court, and the Vatican, all forming the kaleidoscope of the Italian network of power, including the three prime ministers, Andreotti, Craxi, and Berlusconi. My dear esteemed audience, as I said before, Italians understand the Vatican's control. 6 months ago, the Pope informed Silvio Berlusconi his bunga bunga parties were not the only problem that concerned the Vatican. Italy's debt was troubling the Holy See. Could it be that the Vatican, with all their artwork, would have to bail out Italy? Yes. And this brings me again to bring up, oh, sorry. My phone's going off again. Pronto! Ah, Silvio Berlusconi. Yes, yes, we know you used to be the former prime minister. I'm giving this wonderful lecture. Excuse me, Silvio, I really, truly can't speak to you. But I would like to say we'd love to see you in San Francisco. Why not? Now, Silvio, this is the thing that's really a problem. I can't speak. Tell Monty we wish him good luck. We hope he can solve the debt crisis. Dear audience, art, Italy, mystery, bribery, money. The Vatican must bail out Italy. Do you believe this is being done as I speak? The newly appointed Prime Minister Monti began office only 6 months ago, and he's ordered the Vatican to collect taxes on all its commercial real estate, which includes our Watergate complex in Washington, D.C. Yet, never forget, we just have to look at the munch that was just auctioned for $120 million. Art, money, they go hand in hand and they talk in all languages. We will watch the shenanigans of Italy, the ways of the Pope, the Holy See, Berlusconi. Never forget, Berlusconi's wealth is estimated between $6 and $9 billion. We won't even speak about the art in the Vatican or what Bernini's pieces are worth. They all have extraordinary power. Protagonist Bebe, who never expected to be entwined in the intrigue of Rome, in love with Italy, passionately in love with Italy and its art, learns the philosophy of the eternal city with values foreign to her. She has an American upbringing, but she learns about the splendor and the vortex of Italy, and it all comes alive, and she realizes that the victor over all intrigue is the truth. And in this wonderful eternal city, she puts the kaleidoscope of power behind her, remembering 2,000 years ago, Cicero wrote about omens, mysterious affiliations, societies and allegiances that are part of the Roman way of life. Friends, Romans, San Franciscans, countrymen, nothing changes in Rome. It was, it is, and will be forevermore the most magnificent city with art, but tainted with vices. Everyone loves Italy, but as Bebe finds over the course of time, one becomes wiser. Whether Michelangelo, coming from Florence, Bernini from Naples, Berlusconi from Milano, or Bebe from America, all come to know Italians look at life differently. Whether you're Michelangelo trying to hoodwink the Vatican with his statue of St. John Baptist, or Bernini using his influence to get special commissions, there is a corrupt society that permeates glorious Italian life to survive. A wink of the eye, a gesture of the hand, a friend who has a friend who has another friend who will do a favor, all survive, and in that, all find the greatest art treasures in the world and philosophy of La Bella Vita. All hold hands in the dazzling, magnificent, beautiful landscape of Italy. Bebe, Michelangelo, Bernini, Berlusconi find their dream in the Eternal City, a dream with its own rules that have been in place for centuries. All roads lead to Rome with power moguls, prime ministers, popes, spies, millionaires, paupers, and princes. But, says Bebe, art lasts forever. Buonasera, grazie tanti. If anybody would like me to go over the pictures of the video, I would be delighted to do that. Okay, wonderful. Well, this is Piazza Navona, and that is one of the beautiful places that I think you see when you're in Rome. And this is a Raphael fresco at Sant'Agostino, one block away from Piazza Navona. This is Trinity de Monte. This is Via Condotti, without all the morass of tourists. And that's the boat fountain. That was what Bernini was working on when Cardinal Borghese discovered him. This is a very amusing Bernini sculpture. The elephant is smiling, and one of his underlings helped finish that. That's a Vatican clock. Notice there's only 6 hours in the Vatican Gardens. Quite a magnificent piece. And this is a special temple that was built at the time of Caesar. And it's still there today, beautifully restored. Vatican Gardens. Vatican Gardens are sumptuous, and of course, to get into them is special. This is such a beautiful statue, and it tells you this is in the English cemetery where Keats and Shelley are buried, and the Colosseum. And we know what went on in the Colosseum. And it is exciting because it was absolutely something we'd never dream of. Via Appia Antica. Everyone has taken it if you go to Rome because that's the way you come into the airport. Here is the beautiful Campidoglio, part of the wonderful piazza Michelangelo developed. And this is my beautiful cover, a gift to me by a very famous artist widow, Renee Boucher, who had escaped the Nazis. And this beautiful lady gave me this as a gift prior to me ever publishing the book. There's Costanza. Look at her cheeks. Look at how beautiful she is. Look at, she's wearing a little nightdress. She's not in all the lace and frilly things. And then look at Medusa. This took 10 years for him to do, and he colored it with special wax to create that dynamite look. Here, of course, is a little rendering of Rome. Very pretty. And, of course, the famous Pantheon, the greatest piece of work in antiquity, 2 BC. Agrippa's name is on it. He was a general. Here's the Angel Bridge, the Vatican, and the Tiber. Here's one of Bernini's magnificent angels. Remember, he was no angel when you look at his angels. There we go again. The interesting thing, Bernini only did two of those angels on the Angel Bridge. The rest of the angels were created by his team of workers. And here's Vatican Square, obelisk from Egypt. This is the Constantine's, the wonderful Dome Constantine with the Colosseum. This Michelangelo did 23. It's David, or David, as they say in Italy. And here's the Fountain of the Four Rivers, Piazza Navona. There's a horse in between there. Ah, now look at some of that ecstasy, everybody. That is marble. You would swear that's a human being. He was a very sexy boy. And there's the African with his hand out saying, stop. Borromini and Bernini were, there's the colonnade. That's, I said, a mother embracing her children before you go to the Vatican. Another extraordinary statue of David by Bernini. And Vatican Square again. He also was responsible for the flooring in Vatican Square after Michelangelo contributed and worked on the dome. Piazza di Spagna. Piazza di Spagna is not owned by the Spanish. This is Fontana di Trevi, which is 200 years after Bernini. Here's the wedding cake, which is the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier, with marble that is far too white. The Italians are like a hermaphrodite. This statue is, we don't know the year, but it is a statue Bernini worked on to restore. And, of course, here we are again in the Pantheon, and that center obelisk has the three stages of man. The ecstasy of Santa Teresa. The angel has an arrow. An arrow symbolizes, guess what? And here is the Colosseum again and the wonderful Roman sky, Medusa. Mm-hmm, Medusa. She's quite a lady. I think you know what that is, Rome's antiquities, the Forum, the Vestal Virgin. And there he is. Look at those eyes. What woman could resist him? Hmm? Quite a boy. He had about, I think, he must have had 20 self-portraits that he did. So he was quite infatuated with himself. And here is the very exciting Daphne and Apollo. Again, the Angel Bridge. And that's the Castello Sant'Angelo. And you can see at the top, there is a small pathway, no bigger than this box, that goes to the Vatican. This is right below Via Veneto, another Bernini sculpture. Again, the colonnade from the air. Another statue in Piazza Navona. Bernini was just incredible. He was, and this he did when he was 26 years old. This is the Pope. And his garment, which I did not show, but his garments are just full of lace. You can't believe it's out of marble. That's the baldacchino, the center altar in St. Peter's. Look at the hands on this. The Rape of Proserpina. Just look at the hands. You can see him just pulling her flesh. And we have a little bird there that looks like he's enjoying Bernini's art. And, of course, here's the colonnade again. Another vantage point. It was quite something because Bramante was a great architect. There's the Castello Sant'Angelo. And there is this very small pathway that the Borgias used, and also Cellini. This is beautiful. This is a Greek temple in Galleria Borghese Gardens. Here's Villa Medici, where Scipione Borghese lived. And there's the hermaphrodite from the back. And this is very charming. This is Campo di Fiori. Campo di Fiori, everybody gets out there and puts out their fish and their flowers every morning and gets rid of them by 2 o'clock. And here we have the beautiful Angel's Bridge again. This is a street with the Tower of the Monkey. And there's a folklore which you read about in my book. And this is, again, going to the Campidoglio. Michelangelo had created those steps. You can walk up those steps and not be breathless, which is extraordinary. They're so perfectly weighted and perfectly done in time, one step to another. And there we are in Rome. And I would like to say, you didn't have to fasten your seatbelt. It's beautiful to have you here. I hope you enjoyed it. And to the Bella Vita.
We'd like to remind our listening audience that this is a program with the Commonwealth Club of California. I'm Ann W. Smith, co-chair of the Member-Led Arts Forum, and you are listening to Jojo Capecchi. Well, we do have a couple of questions, so let us begin. Are you the photographer that we can thank for some or all of your wonderful photographs?
Actually, no. I happen to be gifted by having one of our wonderful children, my son, did this video for me. And so he lived in Rome, and he was very appreciative to do it because it brought back so many memories. These are pictures that you can find. We did find it on the internet, and then he did the beautiful work of making it a video.
How, if you do think so, was Bernini's desire to control reflected in his art and design?
Good question. Very good question. Bernini is so powerful, and he had this extraordinary gift. Of course, I've tried to show you both sides of Bernini because it's easy to love him. But look at that passion. Look at that control he had. And when you think, even when he started a canvas, his work, you saw his self-portrait, which was then on the Italian lira. It was his knowledge that he had something special. He didn't believe in himself, but he knew that he had something special. And he had to control that and had to keep working on that. And of course, he didn't want anybody else in his way. The statue you saw of the elephant is a perfect example. That is in a small piazza just near the Pantheon, and the elephant is doing something terribly naughty. He has a smile on his face, and his back is to someone who did not give Bernini the time of day. Now, Bernini designed that statue. He got the commission. He got the place where it was going to be. He was also gifted with this enormous obelisk from Egypt to be tantamount at that piazza. But he did not give credit to his underling who had done, let's say, 80% of the work. So it's only coming out now. And that's typical of Michelangelo and all those people. They had even Rodin. I think people know about Rodin and Camille Claudel. They had huge sculpture studios, and that's the way they could make money and control things, and he loved money. And so what happened is that if he got a commission from Ambassador Osgood, for example, he wasn't about to say to the ambassador, I'm going to give that to this underling next to me, even though that underling might have had tremendous talent. So he signed the name Bernini, as Michelangelo did, as Rodin did. But they didn't do every single piece of the work. And that was a big eye-opener to Bebe, which you read about in my book, because Bebe had all thought this was sacred, just like we would look at the angels and say, he has to be an angel. Look what he did. So it's the human condition, and I think that's what's so exciting about Italy, because there is so much emotion. But can we control those emotions?
And if you talked about comparisons between today and Bernini's time, why do you think we don't have, or maybe there are, that we don't know about, artists of comparable impact on today's world from Italy?
Well, from Italy or from all over the world, I think we can. I was really quite... someone who's somewhat of an art historian in my own humble way, I was shocked at the Scream fetching $120 million. And then it's been a very cute spin-off, how that people were able to take that into. I think that we're afraid of emotion today. And I think the more digitally inclined we become, the more people are stepping away from emotion. Bernini was all emotion. So was Michelangelo. And yes, there are the exceptions. But it has to be politically correct now. People are so worried about stumbling on somebody's toes. And art can't be like that. It's just like writing a symphony. You've got to hit that crescendo and not be afraid and not worry if someone is going to say it should have been in G minor. And so I think that is where we come with this new world. Yeah, it's great because you can get a video and you can do wonderful things like that. But we're also losing that. And remember, all these deals were made face-to-face, eye-to-eye, and a handshake. That's something we've lost.
Great answer. Now, here's an interesting question that deals with the economy. Mm-hmm. What might happen to Italy if the Vatican were to auction off many artworks? Perhaps use the dollars to help ease with poverty worldwide and in Italy?
I'm a Catholic, so I begin with that. A Catholic, as I say in my book, like Bebe, Catholic a la carte. Now, I grew up with the poor box. But I don't think anybody in the Vatican would even give one of those beautiful lace robes they wear to anybody for any charity, for any minority, or for anything. And you wonder about that. It's been quite revealing. It's quite revealing to live in Rome because you see things differently. And we have a crisis on our hands. Now, Monty wants to do the latest thing last week was the internet that you could press a button and say, this is where you should save money or you should put your taxes. But one has to remember in Italy, there is, from Cicero's time, probably before Romulus and Remus, the wink of the eye. The cousin who has a brother who has a sweetheart who has another brother could get the job done for you better, cheaper. And I'm not speaking about the mafia now. Mafia is something else. But so I think, first of all, one must remember America holds an enormous amount of Italian debt. We'll never let them go under. With their art, they'll never go under. Their art is truly their life insurance. And I think that it's going to be fine. Molto bene. They'll change the books. They'll do new books. But it's going to be fine. And I promise you, as I am here, I'm very happy to say, as a grandmother, but my great-grandchildren will saunter to Rome, and those beautiful Bernini pieces will still be there, and you'll still get a cafe in Piazza Navona. It will cost you probably much more. But I think Italy's going to be okay.
We hope so. I have time for one last question, which is, any insider tips about where to go in Rome?
Well, I'm very happy to say that I came to this marvelous city, re-meeting my husband 23 years after I was living in Europe. And Ed speaks Italian, and we've been lucky. We go back every year. So Rome, per se, this is terribly touristy, but I don't care. Give me something of Bernini's to look at while I'm eating something marvelous like risotto alla pescatore, and you know that fish just came in that morning. And finish it off with something really marvelous called tartufo, different than the tartufo we know. And that is at a little restaurant right across from the fountain of the fountain of the Four Rivers, and easy to find, but that's something to consider. And I think that there are one thing about Italy, you'll never get a bad meal. Also, another thing, I had a very cute person come over to me earlier and say they're trying to take Italian lessons. One of the things about Italians, when you say buongiorno, if you say buongiorno and you say it wrong, they love you anyway. But in other countries, you have to have a perfect pronunciation. So I think just let go. We know the vices are there. We know the beauty is there. It's la bella vita, too. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Our thanks, our most delighted thanks to Jojo Capecci. And her remarks were wonderfully enlightening, funny, and illuminating at the same time. Our thanks to our audience today and our radio audience. And now this meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California, celebrating its 108th year of enlightenment, is adjourned.